you get started, Mr. Pakulski, Kate has broken her arm and is not here tonight, so you have to appoint someone as a clerk pro temp, and I will do it if you want. So we need to have a motion.
I shall move.
Second.
All in favor? Oh, I don't think you get it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Before we get going, if I get this pain look on my face, I have terrible back pain right now, so I may bend over and stretch out my back. It's not that I'm going to throw up.
The only reason yours are in yellow is yellow paper was left in the copier. Not that people think they're different. It's just printed on yellow paper.
Okay, we have an action item, of course, which is the budget resolution, or bond resolution, sorry. Do I have to read the whole thing, I guess, is the question?
No.
Okay, let me just read the...
Just what the intent.
Okay. Recommend the board approve the serial bond resolution dated June 14th, 2011. This is for the amount of $248,310, and this is for the purchase of the buses, which was recently approved by the voters.
Second.
Quick discussion. Okay. Questions, sorry.
Can I have the microphone on?
They're on.
How is the volume on each of the speakers? How's that? Hello?
Oh, that's good. Oh, but that's what happens.
Feedback.
Does anyone at this table have discussion or questions about the bond? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And the next is adjourned.
Yep. Adjourn that, and then I go to the public reason.
Okay, I move adjourn the session.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, let's go home. We are here to discuss the budget, and I will, as I did about a month ago, turn it over to Vince and Beth. Beth, you're going to be doing things back there?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, I just need to kill this.
Charlie, the slide's going to be behind you. You want to turn your seat around?
Doesn't matter. You can turn them on.
That works. All right. Our revised budget hearing tonight. And we will have a lot of slides that are familiar and some that have changed. Again, qualifications for voting must be a citizen of the United States or a resident of the district for at least 30 days prior to voting. The vote will be on Tuesday, June 21st, a week from today, noon to 8 p.m. in room 142. The parking will be the same. That room has exterior doors. Since there will be testing going on, we're going to just have coming in and out of that room. So we ask not to have people come through the main doors and to go around to the side of the vote. We'll have signs up and they'll be able to point you in the right direction. Our new budget, $17,710,280. This is a decrease of $47,500 from our previous proposal. This comes about from a reduction in our bus purchase line of $13,500. Again, thank you, community, for supporting the buses. Transportation was reduced by $12,500. We've eliminated a Friday late run due to low ridership. Health insurance was reduced by $21,500. The CDPHP rates came in more favorable than initially expected, which came after, this information came after the initial budget. This budget amount equates to a 1.15% tax increase on the levy. This is below the CPI, Consumer Price Index, of 1.6, the cost of living increase. It's an increase of $653,245, 3.83% in the 2010-11 budget. Down from 4.11. Again, the increases are basically the same, one being salaries, bless you. Debt service is up due to our Excel borrowings. Buildings and grounds, we've had to budget for an increase in oil prices. and transportation, increase in fuel pricing. We show the budget in what we call a three-part budget, administrative, program, and capital components. These percentages actually stayed the same from the previous budget. Our administrative component is 9.5%, which is actually down from the previous year. Program, 72.3, again down from the previous year. Capital is up 18.2%, and that is due to the Excel borrowings. Quickly, the administrative budget, what it includes, it's the supervision, the building principal, staff, the transportation and buildings and grounds supervisors, and their benefits, superintendent and business office personnel, board expenses, district meetings, these type of expenses. Then we have legal, auditing, OSHA's administrative charges, central services such as copiers, postage, things that the whole district uses. Program, the bulk of our budget, is the expenditures that are directly related to instruction and the transportation department. Capital budget, 18.2%. It's the maintenance and operations of the buildings and grounds and debt service. We also have the one line item of the buses, which is now $5,000 from $18,500. We have four main sources of revenues: state and federal aid, almost 51%. The tax levy is going to be going down from 41.8% to 41.7%. Appropriated fund balance is 6.2%. Miscellaneous goes up from the 1.1 to 1.2% of the budget.
Can I ask a question? This tax levy of 41.7%, what is that?
That's the percentage of the budget, the overall budget, the $17 million, that is made up by the tax levy. This is the property tax report card. This is what will be on the budget. It's just a postcard this time. It's not an in-depth newsletter. I just wanted to show you, this is what we'll be getting in the mail in the next day or two. And it sums up the increase in the total spending, the increase in the tax levy. It shows our enrollment is going down slightly, what the consumer price index is, and then we allocate the various fund balances, our reserves. The tax levy increase. To determine the true value, you take our assessed value times the equalization rates. The true value tax rate reflects a 15 cent increase from $12.63 in the 2010-11 year per thousand to a true value of $12.78. So before STAR, a $100,000 home, the tax bill would be approximately $1,278.30. This chart, I'm not sure how well you can see it, it's interesting. We took the 31 component schools and the Wishy-Bosies, and also Hoosick Falls, which is such a close neighbor. We found out all their true value, and you can see we fall right in the middle. So I believe we're doing a good job of trying to keep the taxes down. The schools with the smaller dollar amounts, they're less dependent on state aid, and they have the homes that are worth a lot of money.
The lakes usually too. Lake George.
Right, Bolton. Lake George, Bolton, yeah, the resort homes, vacation homes. All right.
When you talk about true value, you talk about the basis of the value of the home, of the taxpayer?
It's the assessed value times the equalization rate. So that we all are treated the same, because you look at individuals, towns, your value, your rate is going to be different. It should all come together with the equalization rates.
Well, that correctly, it shows an increase, right? It's an increase overall?
Right, 15 cents, because the tax levy is going up 1.15%.
I'm trying to figure out, I read a paper that housing values are all going down and you have an increase. I don't understand that.
The state is probably about 2 years behind, and we're still in the market boom when looking at state aid.
State aid, when you're figuring state aid, as far as the state is concerned, because it takes a while to confirm all the numbers, it works on a 3-year lag. assessed valuation or the total property value in the Cambridge School District, total all the portions of the townships that are within it, are based on 2008. So is the adjusted gross income. So for this year, it was 2007. Next year, it will be based on 2008's assessed valuation. So we were still increasing in assessed valuation from 2007 to 2008. We increased actually up until this past fall. So we will have an increase when they use the 2009 numbers, but when they get to 2010, it will drop about $37 million in total assessed valuation. But it will continue to grow. In 2009, it was $609 million, and then it drops to $577 million.
I understand, according to the Post, you have 940 students. Is that right?
It's an approximation. We run on beds day, we were 926. I think the last time we looked, we were 938. So, yeah, 940 is a pretty good.
When the numbers, when our assessed values go down, that won't change what we're going to be asking the community to pay them. It'll just be divvied up the same way.
It should have an effect when our total value of the district goes down, our state aid should be made up and increased as a result.
Everybody's is going to go down.
Right. It'll be proportionally everybody.
See, to me, it's mind-boggling that...
Charlie, can we let Beth make the presentation first? Thank you.
I'll think I remember all this.
If the budget does not pass this time, we will be forced to a contingent budget. Contingent budget is $17,302,266. This requires $408,014 in cuts. We have three that we know are going to be given. Not make equipment purchases, which is $108,000. No increase in certain salaries, $18,000. We cannot buy student supplies. I'm approximating $25,000 because we really don't buy a lot of student supplies or classroom supplies. An additional $256,000 would be needed to balance the budget. Under a contingent budget, outside groups cannot use the facilities unless they pay. Calculation of charges must reflect the actual cost to the district, not the token charge. The state very stringent punishes. Currently, Cambridge has no policy on how fees must be determined. So that would take some time if there was to be a charging policy. But again, that is a board decision. And again, please vote on June 21st, room 142, noon to 8 p.m. Any questions?
The number of these rooms are kind of confusing. Whether they jump from one to the other, where is 442? The other side of the building?
Right, the other side of the building. The parking will be just about the same place you parked. They have exterior doors, so we'll have signs. There'll be people. You won't miss it.
When you voted last time, did you park in the back and come in the back?
When I parked near the auditorium.
But did you come into the auditorium through the front bus entrance?
Right. Okay.
This time, because of Regents going on, we're not going to have that door open. You're going to have to come around back. When you come around back, there'll be an area to park, and there'll be a sign when you come in.
Right.
It'll be over to your left. You can find it.
Right.
And that's because it's an exterior entrance, and we don't want anybody coming into the building, unfortunately, because of the fact that we still have Regents exams going on.
And this time we'll try to do a better job reserving the parking.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah.
How can we then use the district office since those regions testing over?
The only reason is because we started the vote over here. I didn't want to start to confuse people going back and forth between the two. When we have the vote after this, that will be in the auditorium the week after, and every other one, unless this works out where it's better for the public. Maybe we can work out using this room all the time.
Any of my colleagues up here, any questions for Beth or Vince? Any more questions from out there? Yes?
How do we get an absentee ballot from the building?
Kate, she'll be in the morning. I don't know if you were here when I said it. She fell and broke her wrist last night. So. But you have to fill out an application. When you return the application, you get the absentee ballot. And if you fill it out right then, she'll give it to you right away.
can I make my comment now?
Sue raised her hand, sure.
That's okay. Old fashioned, you know, I'm still used to it. Just because I wasn't here at the beginning. So you as a board, though, do feel that this is absolutely the lowest budget that you could come through, you know, for the community? I'm just, this is...
Sue, no, it's not the lowest budget.
Okay.
We can eliminate sports, we can eliminate all extracurriculars. Maintaining program as is, I think this is as low as we can reasonably go.
No, that's what I meant. In other words, to maintain a good program.
Vincent and Beth worked on this with the goal this year of maintaining program, because last year we lost 24 and a half positions. And so the thought was to not do that this year, try and get a budget which was reasonable, which we thought it was, and this one is, but not to slash any program. There's just program. We're talking about program stuff that the kids and the parents in the school really want at this point. Second languages, there's lots of things to remove, but none of them are pleasant or really advisable.
And I guess the other thing is I mean, do you foresee, I guess you can't believe, you know, is there other creative ways of, if the state doesn't come through with any funding, that this community can somehow, you know, get more tax money? I mean, is there any other ways of doing that besides encouraging businesses to come to the community, or?
Everything's based on the property tax. If you're going to encourage business to come in, that's a time. And quite frankly, this community doesn't, from what I feel, and I've been here a long time, doesn't want business in this community.
Is there any way to do more political through our legislators where we can buy for more state aid? I don't know if there's anything that...
I've tried, but they don't do that. They don't give you any more aid. I've had conversations with Tony Jordan and Betty Little's office. We even tried to go with Chris Gibson. And there's really nothing.
Everybody's in the same boat.
Yeah.
Everybody's feeling the same pinch. We have districts that have already cut sports. We have districts that have, like, you know, lots of teachers, just like we did last year. They're doing it this year. They did some last year. They're doing more this year. I think 15,000 teachers in the state were let go last year. And I don't know how many more this year will be gone. Everybody's feeling it, and I don't worry the money's going to come. The economy has to turn around, and that may or may not happen in the next year or two. Who knows?
Yeah, because I mean, it's a plea for you guys. Really, you really need to start probably planning out, you know, unfortunately, for the next couple of budgets and what, you know, what where.
I'm smiling because we're hard pressed to plan for this one, let alone.
Oh, I know.
A few years ago, they gave what they called the foundation aid, and they said by 2012, we would get X number of dollars. They backed way off on that, even before, it was Spitzer that started it. So even before he was out of office, they didn't give us we were supposed to have this 37% of what it was. We were only getting 30%, so they had cut it in the second year. And now it doesn't exist. And what they do now is, they say they're not touching your foundation aid, but they still take away state aid. So if they're not touching your foundation aid, how are they taking it away? They are reducing our foundation aid. So that's the biggest problem. They need to have a way that will aid education, that will be balancing across the board. When Beth showed the true value tax rates, if you think about it, the lower the tax rate, or the true value tax rate, the wealthier the district is, so the less state aid they get. So if a district that gets 20% state aid gets to cut 10%, they only lose 2%. We were getting over 50, we're still just a little over 50. At one point, I think it was up to, 60% state aid? But when we lose 10%, we lose 5% aid. And the poorer districts get more of a burden thrown back on their taxpayers. And that's the problem. It's supposed to be fair and equitable with the state aid formula. It's not.
You know what I think I worry about is, I don't know where the state is headed with education. I don't know what they really want the schools to do. It's really unclear what they really expect the schools to do. I mean, what is it that they're asking us? Taking away the money, and you guys are supposed to be creative out there. Us that's the final goal?
Well, I think the funny thing with the Race to the Top money and everything, they were talking $700 million. We got $32,000 over 4 years. So we're not going to be able to do much with that. Now with the APPR, the Annual Professional Performance Review, I have to go for 20 days of training, and all the administrators have to go for 13. So that's pulling them out an additional that we have to pay for this. And that's only one of the aspects. What they're using in supposedly in the APPR are the state exams, and they've cut all of the language exams other than English. So they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. We sat through a webinar yesterday, and they're still talking. Now here's a commissioner and two of the deputies. They're still talking about the New York State standards. And we've already been told we should be addressing the Common Core standards now because that's where we're going. But they're still using the New York State standards when determining the APPR. So I don't think one hand knows what the other one's doing down in Albany.
What's the difference between those two standards you've...
New York State developed their own standards, and the way they usually have described it in the past, they're a mile long and an eighth of an inch deep, where you cover all the topics but only go in a little bit, and then you review it year after year or every so often in the elementary grades. Now they're going to have less of an area to cover, but they want you to go deeper and in more depth. And the Common Core standards were all accepted by the 26 states that signed on for Race to the Top. So they needed to have a common grounds to compare everybody. In essence, what they did is some of the New York State standards, even though they're not the same, they were changed and placed at different grade levels. So even though we're going to the same destination, how we're getting there is changing. And that's the biggest thing that I see getting everybody educated, the staff as well as the administration, to how to evaluate the staff and whether or not the staff does in their grade level what they're supposed to do or in their subject or disciplinary. So.
Gary?
Colin made a statement in the beginning of the year with it. I was interested. He was saying that our fund balances on a lot of the schools was actually overfunded,
yep.
Which the schools did use this year. He almost forced them to. Yep. And they made teacher cuts. But he can't really think that we can continue to give quality education, get rid of teachers, and you can't dip into a fund balance that's not there anymore. I mean,
this has been the discussion at all the chief school officers, the other superintendents. Somebody needs to tell the emperor he has no clothes. It's kind of like, okay, we have a savings account, so you're supposed to take that savings and use it. How often can you dip into your savings account before it doesn't exist? And that's what has happened. What happened to us last year, we were ahead of the curve. That's why we lost the staff. This year, everybody else was getting hit with what we got hit with last year. And that's because if you go back in our history, when I was talking about those 3 years, we got hit with the increase, a huge increase, in 2006, from 2006 to 2007. And theirs, it was like whiplash, they got it this year. So, and I wish there was some way he'd listen, because some of the stuff that he says too, he was talking about 37% of the New York State population didn't have GED or equivalent or whatever it was. He was talking about one statistic from one group of individuals years ago. It wasn't current information that he was saying. And he's very popular right now, so whatever he says, everybody seems to jump on the bandwagon. But I really don't think they understand what they've done to education. Because if they don't continue to support it, the poorer districts are going to get taken right on the chin. There's no way that we can sustain what we've done last year and this year. We were lucky. We took $425,000 from our fund balance last year. We were able to return because of the way we pre-purchased and leveraged what we had. We were returning $300,000 back to the fund balance this year. So, in essence, we said we were going to use $425,000. We only used $125,000. We're hoping to return some of it next year, but there's no way that I can sit here and say, okay, it's 1.1 million, we're going to return 800,000. That's going to be a very long stretch. If we can get back to what we did this year, I'd be happy as heck. So, yes?
What is the current fund balance?
The current fund balance, Beth?
It's a little over two million.
Now, when you're talking with the fund balance too, and they're changing it under GADSB 45, right. What you call it. When we've talked about the fund balance in the past, it's what we have in the appropriated fund balance, what we actually are using from year to year, the unappropriated fund balance, which is just left over from one year to the next, and it usually falls into the reserves, and our reserves. So now it's assigned appropriate.
Yeah, assigned, unassigned, committed.
Because they allowed you to tap into your reserves, because in the past you can only use the money in the reserve for what the reserve was designated for. But this year they allowed you to tap into your reserves because the governor felt that there were certain school districts that were overfunded in certain reserves. We all didn't have that same luxury. There was none of them that we were overfunded in. And the reason they changed the assignments is because of the fact that they allowed us to get into them. So you can say, well, this was in a reserve, but now it's assigned. I don't know. I have to check up on that, because you were just at the meeting last Friday, so it's only 3 days old that we've been exposed to it. But that's something that's coming. It's already changed on how we have to report to the state, so that'll be in our year-end balance sheets and stuff.
The ST3.
ST3,
which is.
Appropriated fund balance, is that something
that's designated? We say what we're going to use it for. And usually what it is, if it's specific to just the general appropriated fund balance, that's used for the general fund the next year. Is that a good enough definition?
I would say it's a plug between your revenue and expenses. So if your revenues are less than your expenses, then you've got to plug it with your appropriated fund balance. That's where you have to limit the 4% of next year's budget.
Okay.
So that's kind of like your emergency fund. It used to be 2%, and now they let you do 4%. That's your unappropriated.
You're saying if you had major expense or something in the school, you would use that.
That was not budgeted for.
That was not budgeted for.
Yeah.
Right.
If it was not budgeted, there was a major expense, and I don't even know what we're rolling over this year because the books aren't closed as of June 30th. But we're looking to try to return the $300,000 of the appropriated from last year.
What was last year's?
Last year's unappropriated?
Would have been, you know what, I'm going to be slow. Last year's $500,711. It was 3% of this year's budget.
Beth, can you go to the next slide, please?
Yep.
Maybe it's the next one. Is that, yeah. This one, I think you went over pretty quickly, and I think it's an important one to show, because it really, what this shows, I think, if I'm reading it correctly, is where we stand as a district in terms of what our taxpayers are paying in taxes,
yes,
compared to basically all the local school district. And I think a lot of people are under the impression that we have really high taxes here. And our budgets tend to vote it down. But if you look at that, I think everyone above us in the left column are the people that have lower taxes than us. And everyone below us, including Hoosick Falls, are people that have substantially higher taxes than we pay, given the same value, true value of the houses. If you look at, I'm seeing Bolton, I'm seeing Lake George, I'm seeing North Warren. Those are districts that have numerous million-dollar homes and multi-million-dollar homes on the lake. They're able to have very nice low taxes because they have so much real estate value. We don't have that. And yet, we're still a little better than average, I think, in this group in terms of paying. We'd love to have that lower, but that really kind of puts us into context as to where we really are.
This is the first time that you're really comparing apples to apples when you look at districts. This is what they pay per $1,000. And usually, like you said, with Bolton, they're million-dollar properties. That's why it's so low. Yep.
Charlie, you have a question?
No, I got a bunch. Go away. The balance you have, you just went through. Can you take that money and put it into the structure? Because there's a lot of things you want to construct or improve. Do you think that
into the facilities?
Yeah.
If you were to do that, you would not get any aid whatsoever. So if you spend $1,000, it would cost you $1,000. The reason that we're trying to do a building project is if you spend $1,000, it's only going to cost you $200. and that's the way the state aid funding works.
A lot of red tape.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I look at the figures, like 17 million odd, I think of 940 students. I do the division, and I think it's like, oh my God. You know, I should have had that when I went to school.
Proportionally speaking, it probably was the same when you went to school.
Exactly.
The cost of living was much less than the transportation.
Oh, yeah.
How much? When I started driving a car in 74, I paid 36 cents a gallon. So I'm sure everything is proportionally.
Yeah, but a dollar was a dollar.
A dollar was worth more than a dollar today. A dollar then was worth more than a dollar today.
If you look at some of the other districts.
I'm sorry?
If you look at some of the other districts, which I have, and you take their population into their budget, Cambridge is actually cheaper.
I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, but I know in the Albany Business Review, they usually go through and do their per student cost.
I'm just basing it on their headcount and what their budget is. We're actually cheaper. We're cheaper in Greenwich. We're actually last year, I think we were cheaper in Salem. Per student, what it costs to educate.
Yep. Oh, yeah. We had done a comparison.
$200 cheaper than, I think, Salem, and I think you're four or five or maybe more. Per student, cheaper than Greenwich.
We had done a comparison for some of the districts for something. I can't remember what it was, but under the excess cost, that's where they tell you. Excess cost is what you basically pay if you have a special ed student. The tuition per student is across the board, and you don't get reimbursed unless you get over three times what your average, total operating, total aid pupil units, TAPU they call it. And if it's three times what your average operating expense is, then they'll pay above and beyond that. So in other words, ours may be $8,000. We have to get over $24,000 to get the additional revenue and excess cost coming back. So when we went through and compared, in other words, if somebody costs $60,000 to educate, because it's a special ed student that has to go to a special program, we have to pay the difference between the average expenditure for every student, because that's state aidable, and three times that cost, so that from $8,000 to $24,000 we have to pay locally. Everything above that comes back to us as a percentage of excess cost. And I don't know what that is off the top of my head, probably around 50% back. But anyways, the point of what I'm trying to say is, we looked at those and compared, and at one point we were like $3,000 a student, and I cannot think of anybody that was less than $6,000. So ours per pupil cost at that rate was much less than everybody else. Yes?
General question.
Sure.
Sports program seems to be very thorough, and I spent my high school years playing second string on a basketball team. And I'm trying to figure out what's the education benefit having all these sports.
That one's going to probably open up the community.
That's something we can talk about tonight. We will have that discussion over the next year, because obviously sports are going to be discussed in the next budget. All the extracurriculars are. But that's a broad philosophical question, which is, I think, way beyond what we can do tonight. So I'm going to put you off, but we will be talking about it over the next year. Okay.
So, you're talking about comparisons, and I was just wondering, has there ever been a comparison with the same, like, population, but also with the salary that most of our community gets? Because that's the real thing. Is like, if you're in a town that where the average person is making more, okay, that also is different than in this community where a lot of people aren't making. I don't know. I don't know if there's any way to compare that either.
Well, there's a website called zipskinny.com. You can do it by zip code.
Okay.
But since we're multiple zip codes, we can't get what our district is. But at the state level, they do an adjusted gross income, because you fill out on your state tax form what school district you're in. And let's see, in 2006, we were $114 million. In 2007, that's the adjusted gross income. 2007, it went up to $131 million. And in 2008, for next year, we dropped down to $114 million. So that's an indication that the recession has hit this school district. I don't know what's going to happen next year with the adjusted gross income, but I do know the assessed valuations are still going up in 2009.
But are you saying like that's...
That's the total amount of household income in the Cambridge School District.
Okay, you're saying that's an average of what people made?
No, that was $114 million. I don't have an average because
okay.
I don't know what the population is, but maybe I can find that out, but they usually deal with the gross income and the gross assessed valuation. So, and that's what they, those two numbers, that's the combined wealth ratio of the district. And that's how they calculate what you're worth and how much money you're going to get. Cambridge on that one handout was 0.64 on their combined wealth ratio, which means we're 64% of the average in New York State. So if you go down to Westchester County, it's, I think the lowest one is 1.8 in the townships, and or the school districts, I'm sorry. And they went up to as much as 5.4%. So they're very wealthy down in Westchester County, but we're at 0.64. For this year, they don't have the next year's, well, this year based on 2008. So.
Like, I think that would be a good statistic, you know, even for a community, you know, what is the average income and are we in the, you know.
I wish I could do that. The average income is going to, if you go on Zip Skinny and you do 128.16, I think it's about $37,000, the average income.
Household or individual?
Household.
And the U.S. Census Bureau, I don't know if everybody got it, but I know we received two this year, and the second one, and I spoke to them personally, was getting the information you're asking. They want to know and readjust the state aid. So, you know, the government is looking at that and trying to get those figures for households to adjust that aid. I know everybody got their census over the summer, but selected few in the areas also got an additional one to kind of get that, you know, income, where people are, how many kids are in public school, how many kids are in private, all of those basic, like, you know, oil, gas, you name it, they targeted everything. So they're trying to get those figures.
That information is online. Well, I mean, you could have this country come in and treat, you could have multi-millionaires move into this area, and your average income went up.
Oh,
you didn't go up at all. So I mean, you can...
See, that's what's happened with the real property. There are some horse farms that came in that sold, and now they're valued at $1.8 million.
Exactly.
And that skews the average household, the cost of a house in the district. So that's when you get the extremes, it really is terrible when you start talking averages, because it doesn't really mean as much.
It doesn't mean that.
But again, there should be some way to figure that out, so that's not that as much of a...
I think right now, with all the information that the state and federal government's gathering, we should be able to get that, because all it is a database, and all you do is write a formula to extrapolate the information. We don't have that, unfortunately.
Well, we get back to how we have to collect our money, which is property taxes. That's how they tell us we fund the school. And quite frankly, the state doesn't really care how much people are making. Just tell us how we have to fund schools, and it's how we have to run schools. It gets back to your frustration before and our frustration up here.
Sounds like everybody's doing a lot of campaigning with our governor.
Rural schools need more pressure on the state to get our equal share.
Well, rural schools are at a disadvantage because they're less than 50%. If you take the big five cities and compare that to the rest of the state, it's square miles, much larger for the rural schools in the upstate, but there's fewer voices, and the power base is New York City and Long Island.
Oh, absolutely.
So we usually get left out. When they did the, they had the lawsuit, Committee on Fiscal Equity, we jumped on the shirt tail upstate with the Excel monies, and that's basically the only thing that they gave us. But there was an adjustment to the state aid downstate as well. So they got the Excel money as well as the adjustment. Larger constituency, so they'll get more.
Gary, when I grew up on down on Long Island, we kept hearing about these folkies bellyaching up here about how little money they got. And now I'm one of them, and I'm bellyaching about how little money we get. And I was happy to get an education in a suburban Long Island school, but, you know.
It's just that the state expects us to give a quality education, knowing full well that we don't have the wealth that they have in other areas, yet they still expect us to give an education, a quality education.
Well, I thought it was very clear when you looked at all the different school districts. Saratoga gets maybe, out of a $108 million budget, they get maybe $27 million. They got cut $4 million, so it's really not a big deal to them.
I said that too, that it's not a big cut to them.
No, and on top of everything else, they have the Empire Zone with all the malls and all the shops that are going to be coming back onto the tax rolls pretty soon, where we don't have that luxury. We have no industrial base. So it's a double-edged sword. We keep getting smacked.
Well, it's kind of Cambridge did that to themselves. I mean, anybody that's lived around here knows that we did not want industry in here. We wanted to be a retirement town. It's an old fact.
But this is also why we should do stuff with the building project. That's one way for the rest of the state to pay us 80% back.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. But I'm just saying that, you know, we did this to ourselves as far as making this into a town with no industry, keep it quaint. Well, now we have to pay the cost if we want to educate the children. We don't have any industry. That's what Buddy's places, but they have industry. That's what's paying the freight.
Oh, yeah.
Over in Saratoga and those places. I think Wilton still's not paying any property tax. I don't think
very low.
Well, they are paying any. For years without paying any because they had so much with the malls. Nobody paid property tax.
And the county gets the Saratoga Raceway. So they're really not paying, comparatively speaking, it's not apples to apples.
Okay, now that we all felt sorry for ourselves, any other questions?
Yeah, but it always seems when you read the paper that big businesses come into the community, they don't pay any taxes for the next 10, 20 years.
They usually get what they... When you attract or try to attract businesses, you give them what they call a payment in lieu of taxes or a pilot, and that counts on the revenue side of our budget. And when it's usually 15 or 20 years goes by, then it goes on to the levy. The Empire Zone usually was a 10-year, 0% for the first 7, and then 25, 50, 75, and back to 100% at the end. But the other thing you have to realize if you're doing something like that, a dollar usually spends 3 times in a community. So it is to the advantage, even if they're not paying taxes up front, to attract the business in here because they're going to generate business while they are here. So if you get employees to come in, you know, they'll stop at Stewart's or wherever on the way home and pick something else, and they'll spend more. And that's what we need to do. We have. I wish there was a way that we could attract businesses to this area.
I like it the way it is. It's nice and quiet.
Well, it can be in the outskirts.
Well, we still have responsibility to
Run our until that gets done. Yeah. We're trying.
Thank you for everything that you've done for us. You know, this is an easy job.
Thank you.
Any other questions? So you're looking for something creative. Somebody out there was. My wife grew up in Mileville, New York, way up north of Tug Hill, east, northeast of Tug Hill. They just built, the last 10 years, they built a wind farm, 195 turbines, which now pays the school district 300 something thousand a year. Every year they get that money. So there's creative ways without big industry. There are other things we could be thinking about, but that's not, we can't do that right here. That's the community. The community has to decide.
Did Scott look, did they do that, or are you looking into the cell tower on the school project?
You know anything about that, Beth? Cell tower on Scott?
They talked about it doing it in Scarborough School. Now, I don't know if anything ever went through, but
I never heard anything.
Just kind of in the back of my mind, I kind of remember that. That was a while ago,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. And that generates quite a bit of revenue.
Yeah.
I'm surprised how much they paid for itself.
It what?
It's not going to happen.
No. Oh. No, but they did talk about it.
Okay, any more questions on the budget that we will be voting on next week? With a 1.15% tax levy increase, plus 17,700 and change. Okay, any more questions from my colleagues? Comments? Oh, Brian, sorry.
Is this the public hearing?
This is it.
It is okay. I actually have a statement I'd like to make.
Speak now or hold your peace up. Close the meeting down.
I'll speak now. And I'm here because I'm concerned about the way the consequences of the budget vote have been communicated to Cambridge Central School District voters. At the last school board meeting and in an open letter to the community and the newspaper, as well as in the school's mailing to almost every household in the district, there were statements made about what would happen if the budget is not passed that I think were misleading and incorrect. And specifically, it was stated that if the budget is not passed, the school would be forced by law to close its facilities to community groups, which is a fairly startling concept. And I talked about this with my neighbors who reacted with a lot of skepticism. And as a result, I researched that question quite a lot and discovered that that statement is absolutely untrue. Education law is clear that community groups can continue to use the facilities so long as they pay for any identifiable extra cost to taxpayers. The basic document defining the state's position on allowable expenses under a contingency budget is the formal opinion of Council Number 213. This states that among the expenses not allowable under a contingency budget is use of school buildings and grounds by outside organizations, except where there is no identifiable cost to the district or such cost is fully paid by a donation before the activity occurs. I contacted the State Education Department for more guidance and spoke to Jay O'Connor of the Educational Management Services Office, and he stated, I'm quoting him now, "We would refer back to our Office of Council Opinion Number 213, which is really the definitive document on contingent and non-contingent items. I don't believe our office's guidance has ever strayed from that definition." He also provided me with an extract from the Education Department's Budgeting Handbook for School Administrators and School Boards titled Board of Education Responsibility for the Determination of Ordinary Contingent Expenses. This document states, I'm quoting, "If there is no identifiable expense to the taxpayers, or where such extra costs are paid in advance in full by donations, the Board of Education may grant the use by outside agencies of school buildings and grounds." So, for example, the Winter Walk, one of the groups that you said would be barred from using the school, in my understanding, only walks around the hall and does not require any assistance, materials, or extra personnel. They would not present any extra cost to the taxpayers and could continue to use the facilities free of charge. This is true for many of the clubs and sports, too. However, if you have to pay personnel to come for an event like the bike race, for example, the bike race would have to pay for that extra cost, but could still use the grounds. In addition, there is a specific exemption for organizations like the Cambridge Youth Commission, which is covered under executive law and would not have to pay, even if it does involve an extra cost. Any extracurricular activities that receive money from the school would also be exempt. And when I asked Mr. Canini for a reference for his statement that outside groups could not use the facilities under a contingency budget, because my neighbors were having trouble understanding me, he provided me with a copy of the school law handbook. And this actually says the same thing, that community groups only have to pay for any identifiable costs to taxpayers. Mr. O'Connor said that the State Education Department's advice to school districts operating under a contingency budget is to review their policies and change them, if necessary, to provide for an appropriate charge for use of facilities. However, Cambridge already has in place a policy to charge community groups for any extra costs, so it would not even have to go through the simple process of amending its policy. I asked Mr. O'Connor if there is any basis or any explanation for your statements. He replied that he does not know of anything from the Education Department that would support them. Furthermore, he said that the Education Department's advice has always been that districts can allow community use as long as the groups pay for any extra costs. That if this conflicts with existing policy at the time a contingency budget is adopted, the district should amend its policy, and that there is no reason it could not make these changes if necessary. I have concluded that your statement that the school would have no choice but to preclude the use of CCS facilities by community groups is simply untrue. Neither the state nor the law requires this, and to claim otherwise is misleading to voters and taxpayers. Thank you.
Can I comment?
I think we can make, go ahead.
I get where you're coming from, and I'm going to just throw this out here and say youth soccer uses the field. There is still an expense to keep it maintained, you know, for our varsity games and such. So, you know, and I don't think that, you know, we're looking to shut everybody down. We're just trying to follow the laws, and I think Mr. Canini is doing the best job possible.
Yeah, I specifically asked Mr. O'Connor about that, and he said that determining what is an identifiable extra cost is your job. It's up to the school board, and the school board has full discretion to decide if there is an extra cost. And it has to be really an extra cost. It is not the intention of the education department that a group would have to pay because by using the facilities, somehow they, in general, increase the maintenance that's required. There has to be an identifiable extra cost. So if you have a polo team that needs grass that's a quarter of an inch high and it has to be mowed 15 minutes before a game every single time, so you're paying somebody or you're using a certain amount of gas to cut the grass only for that polo team to perform, that's an extra cost. They have to pay the gas that it costs. Or if it's on a holiday or a Sunday and you're paying somebody overtime to do it, they have to pay that cost. But if they're just playing on the field and there's some kind of vague wear and tear, that's not an identifiable extra cost. You could certainly say, we think in the long run this is costing the school something, so we're going to make you pay $25 to cover whatever extra cost there is, but that would be your decision. You don't have to do that. You would be, because there's nothing that's, you're actually out of pocket paying only for that group, you don't have to charge them that cost.
And I think the school, in my opinion, has always been very welcoming to the community. I think the intent of that letter is just to advise that there could be potential costs. You know what I mean? That's my understanding.
That's not what the letter said. The letter said that by law, the school would be forced to preclude community groups from using it.
We've always had, and this is, I think, officially from the last policy manual revision, we decided to have an open campus. There's several classifications of the type of campus. We decided an open campus, open to all reasonable groups, and to be free of charge. We can change our policy, and it will take several months to do that, and we have to come up with fees that seem reasonable. I hope we don't have to face that, quite frankly. Then I'm not saying we will or won't, but that's a discussion that will happen starting after next week if the budget goes down. I think we should wait on the discussion until then.
Your letter did say that by law you would be forced to preclude teenagers from using the facilities.
Because we don't charge now. We have a policy that said we do not charge.
Well, the policy somebody showed me the policy handbook and under community group in section 1500, it does say, first of all, it does say that you do charge community groups to use them, but you can have the right to waive it. Under certain circumstances,
we never have.
But there is nothing preventing you from changing the policy.
Well, other than engendering a lot of ill will, because somebody will say you charge them that, and you charge us twice that. There's all sorts of, it's a whole can of worms, which I'd rather prefer not to open up by having a budget pass.
And I respect that, but the statement that you would be forced by law to preclude groups from using school facilities is not.
I have to admit, I talked to a lot of people, and I have had a lot of people say to me, we feel like we're being threatened. If we don't pass this budget and the contingency was in, nobody's available to use the school.
Certain groups will end up not using the school, and I think that's the truth.
I think that the general thing, I know everybody's seen this television ad about the, from the New York Times, about the 2% cap on property taxes. They start out with a statement, which is true, that they overtax. Then they say, well, it's unfair and it's detrimental to the students' well-being and education if you pass that tax, 2% tax. And then it goes on, blah, blah, blah. It gets to the end. It's repeated almost every hour. I'm trying to figure out where the hell they suggested any other alternative. You know, it'd be a different story to say, well, instead of doing that, maybe you should do this. And at least they thought it out. The New York Times, I can see why I don't read it. They don't have a good funds sheet section.
That was an advertisement by the teachers union.
Well, no, they didn't say that.
It's right at the end of the ad. It's paid for by the teachers union.
I'd like to just respond to Lillian and to Ms. Bass. You cited specifically the example of the walkers, the people who come in and walk during the week, during the winter, and that would be no cost. And that's, as far as you know, it's no cost. But the way I was involved with it this year is we thought we were going to lose it because that was done in accordance with Glens Falls Hospital. They provided the insurance for it, they publicized it, and then they just stopped. And we found out that we weren't going to be able to do it. What we end up having to do to keep that going is call our insurance company and set up a specific rider for that activity. We ended up having to negotiate that with them. I'm not exactly sure what that cost. But even if the cost was minimal, and again, I don't know what the number was, even if the cost was minimal, now let's say it's a couple hundred dollars. We have to figure out now how to take that couple hundred dollars and how to distribute it among the people who are walking and using the facility. I know it's easy for you to kind of wave your hand but we have to figure that out. I mean, if it's three people doing it, is it $100 a pop? If it's 30 people? So these are real difficulties. I understand your frustration with the exact wording of the letter, but again, I don't want to speak to that, but the spirit of what the message is it's going to inconvenience people.
That may be, but it is untrue to say that you're barred by law from voting in the group. And I think that's a very strong statement, and it's not true.
I know you're very much about the letter of the law. But can we agree on the spirit of the law?
I'm talking about your statement, no. Because the law says that you can let community groups, you are... There's nothing in the law that says you're barred from letting community groups use the facilities.
You gave me an example of the walkers, and I'm trying to explain to you why, even if we had said, and again, I'm not exactly sure which letter, that's why I don't want to comment on it, but even if the letter said, can't use the facilities without paying for them, then it would have met your criterion of, with those few extra words, it would have met your criterion of being the letter of the law, however. That's fine and dandy for you, but we as a board will still have to figure out how we explain this to the people who use it, how do we go about charging, and how do we come up with a fee structure. So it's wonderful that we have the letter of the law, and that would be ideally my preference as well, but let's not lose sight of what we're trying to do here, which is to run the school district as best we can and to make it as accessible to as many you know, we don't have a lot in this community, and one of the things we do have is the school and, you know, and these facilities, and we do, as Tom said, we're very big on keeping that as open as possible to the community. We'd like to keep doing that. And that's really what's behind our concerns.
I don't really understand what you're saying. The law is very clear about what the requirement is, and that was in fact reflected in Ms. Coates' presentation. And it's not ambiguous, it's not complicated, it's very easy to research. I mean,
it is complicated in coming up with the numbers that you suggest we do, and the board may decide not to do that.
And that would be your choice. You would have that option.
So there's an option, there still is a possibility that if the contingency budget is in place, no one will use the school.
But not because you're barred by law from allowing community groups to use
the
school.
We're barred by our policy right now to let you use the school in your contingency budget.
I So this policy that I saw said that you do charge community groups, that you have the option of waiving it, first of all. Second of all, that can be changed. There's nothing in the law, and there's nothing from the state education department.
That's right, we can.
That would keep you from changing.
That's right, we can.
This young lady here made a point, when you're considering your budget, and you get a statement like that, it depends on the contingency budget, you won't be able to use the school for community purposes. That's almost, she mentioned, that's like a threat. You better pass this budget or else. That's what you just said. That's one way to write it.
You have been misleading the taxpayers with the statement. You have to admit. Instead of beating around the bush and saying you're going to have to charge this, you're going to have to find out. That's your job, is to find out where you're going to get the money from, or who you're going to charge, or what you're going to do. The bottom line is, right now, you've publicized something that is not within the law. That's the bottom line.
Record. Okay, I guess the point's been made.
We're human, we make mistakes. You know what I mean? We're not perfect. If we were paid people, we probably know every ounce of the law. We volunteer our time, we do the best we can with the information and the resources we're given and the time.
The fact remains that groups will be barred from using the school if we go to contingency budget, because we will have to change policy, which will take 3 or 4 months to do, and we'll have to come up with some sort of fee structure, which will offend half the groups, because they'll figure they charge too much and will engender a lot of ill will. So my statement to Ronnie is, I would prefer that we did not have to do this. It would be much simpler for everyone if we just passed the budget and not have to come up with another $256,000 of cuts off our present budget, which will probably start the impact program. That's my final statement. Okay. Should we adjourn? Can I move you adjourn?
Second.
All those in favor? I know, I realized as I said that it was a workshop.